Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
We've raised $1.3 million, and so in addition to the $1.3, the $1 million would cap off what we would need to complete the project.
So what are you going to ask the county commission for on Thursday?
The $1 million.
Because you've been asking for this money for a long time, and we know whatever $750 was going to do 2 years ago, it ain't going to do today. So.
And that's reality.
So Chris Dosif, talking with the members of the Tourism Development Council on, it's Thursday today. This would have been Tuesday. I had to think through what days these things actually happen. Remember yesterday I kind of briefly mentioned that I hadn't watched the commission meeting or the council meeting. I always forget which it is. It's the TDC and then the C is, you know, it's kind of like, I forget. It doesn't matter. Anyway, they were taking up the question of whether to raise the $750,000 that has already been committed to the project, but not approved by the commission, the Board of County Commissioners. The TDC is supposed to vet these things and make sure that they're in line with the statute that authorizes the use of TDT money for certain things and not for other things. And then those recommendations get taken up by the county commission, who then votes yay or nay. There's kind of an open question of if the TDC says no, can the county commission say yes? But the typical way is that they, if they say yes, and the county commission says yes or no. In any case, that was a conversation that they had. And it was a very interesting conversation. Keep in mind, again, they previously authorized the they recommended the $750,000, but it did not get taken up by the county commission to be approved. So that was kind of a pending. And then with increase in costs, Chris Dosif saying concrete costs more now, we need to go up to the $1 million to add on to the already, as you heard Steve mention, the $1.3 million raised from both public and private sources. Other governments have already given, substantial chunks of money. So Jason Nicholson is one of the new members of the commission. I'm going to call it the commission for now. Actually, I'll call it the council because that keeps it separate from the Board of County Commissioners. And I think that's the right name anyway. He was talking to Chris Dosif.
The work that you're doing to create a memorial to honor General Chappie James is truly honorable.
Thank you.
I appreciate your valor in doing this exercise. I do want to point out that if we're on a 5% tax rate of TDT, the Memorial Plaza would need to generate over 141,000 new and incremental room nights just to replace that catalyst TDT at 5%. That's $20 million in room revenue that I'd like for the council to consider over the life of the plaza.
What he's getting at is if you get 5% of the cost of renting a room to stay in Pensacola, 5% goes to TDT, then $20 million of total room revenue times 5% makes $1 million is the money they're thinking about giving to this project. So he's saying in order to justify the cost on a pure net return basis, you'd have to have 140,000 room nights or $20 million in revenue over the course of however much time to justify this additional $1 million being contributed to putting up the Phantom and the flag and the statue of Chappie James at the landing of Three Mile Bridge right into Pensacola. That's just the sheer economics of it. Now, you don't have to get back all the money. You can always say that we're, generally adding to placemaking. There's a lot of things you can say, but what he's doing is just looking at it as a math problem, as an investment return on investment kind of thing. And it is, it's kind of absurd to think that you would generate $20 million of additional, not just that people come, but people come because of this that wouldn't have otherwise come. Because if they're otherwise coming, it doesn't count, right? That you generate that much money for it.
Right. So just for your consideration, will the plaza that I agree is needed and I support personally, is the plaza going to generate 142,000 incremental room nights over its life?
I think you're taking you're taking this particular plaza and isolating from the overall scheme of that park structure.
So Chris is a very big advocate for this project and has been all along, right? You know, he's a retired Marine and he's been working on this and working on this and working on this. And when people question it, he gets irritated at them. And here he's kind of hiding his irritation a little bit. It'll come out later. But he's basically saying, I think you're not looking at this the right way. Well, no, Jason is looking at it the right way from a mathematical point of view. Would building this thing justify itself on a pure return on investment basis? And the answer has to be no. Okay. Now, that doesn't mean it's a bad project. The project, everybody loves this project, myself included. I mean, I haven't heard a single person come out and say, oh, no, we don't want the Phantom and the statue and the flag at that location. No, I don't know anybody who's against the project. What everybody says, though, is we love the project, questions how to fund it, and also a question of whether the TDC is lawfully allowed to fund this project because the statute says you can use the money for these things, you can't use the money for these things, or actually it says for building, you can use it for these purposes. Anything not listed explicitly is not allowed. And this particular purpose is not allowed. That's why we've had questions about things like, is it a museum? It's not a museum. You know, but like it's kind of trying to get it real close and try to nudge it in. That's why there's been, for example, a request for an attorney general's opinion. But even that comes back with a little bit of ambiguity and argument. So Chris Dosev's basic point is to focus less on the statute and more on the statue and try to get people to realize the value of it. Well, he's already won that argument, but that's what he focuses on anyway.
Everybody that comes to Pensacola is going to say to themselves, they're going to say to themselves, now that's a town I want to visit because they're proud to be Americans. There's an intrinsic value to that that I don't think you can add up with any kind of calculation.
Well, unfortunately, it's the role of this board to add that up. And to consider all of the supporting elements to the plaza.
Mm-hmm.
Look, I want this to happen as much as any other citizen in Escambia County, but I do need to reference the facts of the statute. We need to check statutory boxes first, and then we can talk about if it's effective or not secondarily. But for me, I'm having a hard time checking the first box as if it aligns with the statute.
So now what Jason Nixon is bringing up is that you have two different issues. One, does it justify itself financially? It almost certainly does not. Two, does it qualify under the statute? Okay, open to interpretation, but, you know, I'm going to defer to the lawyer. He is. And he says it doesn't. And, you know, I'll take that as the guidance.
Everybody that comes,
you know, after reading the attorney general's opinion and then listening to Mr. Nicholson, I really just don't think this is the right source. I don't, you know, I think we have limited dollars. I know we have a lot for tourist development, but it doesn't seem like it fits the statute. And I think the county can do what they want. I mean, the county commission has funds. You know, they can fund it in some other way, but I just don't think tourist development tax is the way to go.
Charles Baer, a new member of the council, weighing in, because he is also on city council, and they get two seats at this table. He says no. Jen Brer, who's also new to maybe she was on there before. It's so confusing to keep track of who is and who isn't. Also, just total side note, the chair is David Baer. Right, you know, from Lewis Baer Distributing, right? Okay, Lewis Baer's son. And then the two city council members on there are Charles Baer and Jennifer Brayer. So, I swear there is a conspiracy in local politics to confuse news people, myself included, with having too many people on commissions or councils that have similar names. Once upon a time, you had Wilson Robertson and Grover Robinson. The county commission, you had Rob Williamson and J.R. Williams, and even there was another one. Was there, right now on the county commission, you have Steve Inberry and Steve Stroberger and Ashley Hoffberger. So just stop it. Okay, so Jen Brayer, though, sitting in as a member of the county city council here,
for us to say the mayor says he's going to do this. I don't think that actually...
Oh, sorry. This needs a little bit of explanation. The theory is that the mayor is totally on board because he said he's totally on board, D.C. Reeves, and because the city owns the property. And so the city's, you know, memorandum of agreement, MOU or lease or whatever you want to call it, their agreement with the Chappie James Foundation is that you guys maintain it, we'll own the land, that's all good. There's been some legal wrangling over the exact language of that because ownership of the land is a key part of whether it's going to be legal or not. you can't spend TDT money on something that's going to be owned by a private organization, which is kind of like how the Veterans Memorial Park. It's owned by the city, but it's maintained by the Park Foundation. It works just fine. But what he's basically said is, look, we'll adapt to the AG's opinion or the letter. It's not really an opinion. We'll adapt to that and do whatever needs to be done. But somebody's got to pay for it first. And if they're willing to pay for it, great. We'll work with you. But we're not going to keep spending our time on, you know, having the city attorney work on this if you're not going to do it. Well, so he's promised to work with whatever needs to be done. And Jen Brer is saying, I don't know that he can promise that, because if there is a change to the agreement, then city council would have to ratify it, which means he does have to get our permission. It might be a bit of a formality because we're going to approve it, but still, he can't just plain promise that, something which D.C. Reeves' dad, Jim Reeves, on the council was kind of saying that was something that we could take for granted.
It's in his purview. It would actually have to go back before the city council at that point to see where it does. So we've got a lot of ifs still going in place, a lot of anyway, just some consideration also for what's going on here. Is that
I call a question?
Yes.
We ain't getting any more
Mr. positive. Reeves, we still have some other members that not had the opportunity to speak to your motion.
I mean, are they going to speak in favor?
I don't know, but I don't think that's
the
point.
I don't think we
can
are.
Can I clarify something?
Of all these other people.
Yeah. I'd like to.
Yes. So Jim Reeves is getting frustrated because, listen, again, everybody wants the project to work, but Jim Reeves is wanting to vote for it to approve it. The council has already voted before to approve the $750. This is just increasing it by $250,000, recommending to the county commission they say yes, right? And he's like, well, let's call the question, because he's been trying to get this to a vote. And the more people talk, the less it looks like it's going to pass. So he kind of interrupts Jen Brer and says, well, let's just call the question. It doesn't really work that way, especially if other members of the council haven't spoken and several had not spoken. Anyway, they had some more back and forth on it. And the first person to vote, Ashley Hoffberger, she's a county commissioner, new one for District 4. That's mostly the city. She's the commission gets one person to sit on this on the TDC. And David Baer asked her to vote.
So those in favor... Well, actually, let's call the roll, if you would, please.
Instead of just doing a push-the-button vote.
Ashley Hoffberger.
Present.
No, it's a yes or no for the vote. I'm sorry.
It's her first meeting. It's kind of an automatic response when you're doing a roll call. And, you know, I think what happened is she didn't realize we were talking about a roll call vote. She was thinking of it as like an attendance roll call, which they had already done earlier. But it's just kind of... It's the kind of thing that new legislators would sometimes goof on. It's just kind of funny.
Yes, to fund
stands.
The $750 is already there. The motion on the floor is to fund it at the full $1 million request, rather than the $750 that we've already recommended.
Okay. Yes, in favor.
So she's the first vote as a yes, and then they go through the rest of the votes.
James Reeves.
Yes.
That's two.
Shirley Cronley.
No.
David Baer.
No.
Mitesh Patel.
No.
Charles Baer.
No.
Jennifer Brayer.
No.
Brad Molinex.
No.
Jason Nicholson.
No.
So the motion fails.
So that is a 2-7 vote. It fails. They will not vote to increase it to $1 million. Partially because of it not fitting the statute in their interpretation. Partially because it not being justified on an ROI basis, but essentially they voted no to increase it. And that's when things took a turn because I mentioned this briefly yesterday, but Chris Dosev, who's been the like front man for all of this, he's not the only person by any stretch, but he's been the front man. Chris Dosev is, he upsets people. Because he's kind of the hard-charging, get-it-done, my-way-or-the-highway kind of person. That can be very useful. That can also be very abrasive. I get along great with Chris. I don't have a problem with Chris. But you got to realize his personality is abrasive. It's abrupt. He's not a sweet talker. He's not a sugarcoater. And sometimes that gets in his way. Plus, he's made some enemies, you know, running against Matt Gaetz. I don't know whether Alex Andrade considers him an enemy, but he's run against him a very nasty campaign a couple times. So, you know, and then one of the background theories on all of this, my own theory, but I've heard other people kind of say the same thing, is a lot of this runaround opposition that this project is getting is because people don't want to give Chris Dosev a win. And some people perceive this as a Chris Dosev project, you know, Chris Joseph is doing the project. He's doing it for name recognition, for whatever. I don't think that's true. I'm just saying some people have kind of perceived it that way. And the thought is, we don't want to give Chris Joseph the high-profile victory. We love the project, but put somebody else in charge. Now, he's still in charge, so who knows? But there have certainly been, whether it's the naming of the bridge or this particular thing, that people who find him unpleasant, even if they agree with him, and then that becomes a problem. Well, he's about to be unpleasant.
I have a few things I'd like to say.
Yes, sir.
And he goes into what is, I'm sure from his perspective, a sobering reminder of how much the military has done for this country and from our community. And nobody disagrees. I certainly don't disagree with him. And he talks about Guadalcanal and tens of thousands of Marines being deployed and thousands of them being killed and injured, and how important it is. And then he talks about my son, his son.
My son is currently forward deployed off the coast of China with the Marines and his Marines in defense of our national interests. That's the kind of people you have coming from this community. So when you think about dollars and you're concerned about whether it says plaza or venue
within the law,
remember that. And remember John Barcelona. And remember, Americans do not forget their heroes. Thank you.
Meaning, if you believe in the military and you believe in the heroes that have come from this community and you believe in remembering them, then vote for this project. And if you don't, well, we'll remember that. And then he left. And then you actually have members, former, you know, veterans on this commission, on this council. Charles Baer is one, and I think Jason Nixlin is another one, and who said, we love this project, we believe in this project, we are veterans, and it's still a question of whether it fits the law or not. And so here's where it got all squirrely, is I think that by this very kind of abrupt, challenging approach, he talked himself out of the 750 that they already had. Because Charles Baer said, you know, if we're not going to approve the additional 250 because it doesn't meet the statute, we probably ought to rescind the other 750 too. And they did on an 8-1 vote. Ashley Hoffberger voted for that. So the only one left voting for any of the money was Jim Reeves. Now, they did put a sort of asterisk on it, which is pending an analysis by the Haas Center to see whether the thing will benefit tourism or not. But they really took away the original recommendation for $750,000. So today at the county commission meeting, the Board of County Commission meeting, you're going to have this discussion, and they're going to decide whether to vote to fund it $1 million or not. It remains to be seen whether Chris Joseph, I assume he will be there. Will it go his way? Will there be hurt feelings? How will it go? I don't know, but that's going to be this morning. And as often happens in these cases, it'll be interesting to watch. There was other stuff in this meeting about this, but that's the main elements of it all. And we'll cover a little bit more later on in the 7 o'clock hour. 527 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
Oh, no. Stomach issues again?
Stomach issues?
Who are you?
Your pancreas. I could be the real reason for your diarrhea, gas, bloating, stomach pain, or loose, oily stools.
I thought it was my stomach.
People often do, but any of these symptoms could mean having a condition called exocrine pancreatic insufficiency, or EPI. With EPI, the pancreas doesn't release enough enzymes to break down food, but EPI is manageable. Use the symptom checker on identifyepi.com and speak with your doctor. That's identifyepi.com. Sponsored by AbbVie.
As she stared at me through the window, I realized the time we spent in the backyard on her trailer just wasn't fulfilling. We used to have so much fun on the water. I just couldn't crank her up. But Key Marine did. Fun days on the bay are back. Woo! And my Yamaha outboard runs better than ever.
Key Marine gets the work done and lets you handle the fun. Key Marine, your Yamaha outboard dealer on Bower Road in Pensacola. Google Key Marine or find them on Facebook.
Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my side softer?
Can I make my side firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. Your Sleep Number setting. And now save 50% on the new Sleep Number limited edition smart bed. Limited time. Exclusively at a Sleep Number store near you. Learn more at sleepnumber.com.
Local talk during your morning and afternoon drive. Local news every hour. On News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
And now, here's Merv.
Now, I should clarify, I think I was saying Jason Nicholson is an attorney, and he may be. I don't know. I thought based on kind of the conversation that maybe he is, but he is one of the senior folks with Innisfree Hotels is the reason that he's actually on this council, the Tourism Development Council. 529 on News Radio 92.3. Steve Taylor's in for David Wayne all this week with our headlines. Steve?
An appeals court has ruled President Trump cannot end birthright citizenship for now. The U.S. Constitution says anybody born in the U.S. becomes a U.S. citizen. It's an amendment Trump has been trying to overthrow with an executive order. When a Seattle judge banned that executive order, the Department of Justice filed an emergency request to lift the ban and end birthright citizenship.
Yeah, that's going to have to go to the Supreme Court. That's all there is to it.
All the way up to the top, right. Well, Hamas handed over the bodies of four dead Israeli hostages today, including two children ages 4 and 9 months and their mother. They were kidnapped on October 7th, 2023, during the Hamas attack on Israel. The bodies, along with the hostage in his 80s, were handed over as a part of an ongoing ceasefire deal between Israel and the Palestinian militant group. And that's what's happening.
All right. Thanks so much, Steve. Somebody says here, if all of the people in this town love this monument, why hasn't anybody stood up to say, here's the money to pay for it? No, people have, but maybe we were, you know, people were thinking, well, there's going to be, you know, money coming from public sources or whatever. Again, I just never met anybody who's against the project. But, you know, a lot of people can like a thing and not be willing to pay for it, which is, you know, sometimes the challenge of getting a good thing done.
Fox News, I'm Chris Foster. The bodies of four hostages are returned to Israel, including the youngest hostages taken by Hamas during the October 7, 2023 attack on Israel.
Toddlers Ariel, Bibas, Kafir, and their mother, Cherie, and an 84-year-old journalist and peace activist, Oded Leifshus. The official identification process is expected to take several hours. On Saturday, Hamas is expected to release six living hostages.
Fox's Ashley Strohmeyer. President Trump at an investors conference in Miami keeps up his attack on Ukraine's President Zelensky, calling him a dictator.
He refuses to have elections. He's low in the real Ukrainian polls. I mean, how can you be high with every city is being demolished? It's hard to be high. Somebody said, oh, no, his polls are good. Give me a break.
He's at 57% in a Kyiv International Institute of Sociology poll this month. Elections are canceled in Ukraine under martial law declared after the Russian invasion. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning. It's 5:31 right now, 36 degrees and mostly clear. I'm Steve Taylor for News Radio 92.3. Johnson Langdon and Opal Beach may no longer have lifeguards after Escambia County confirmed the federal government recently canceled their contract. After a string of drownings in 2023, the county pushed for more lifeguards in the Perdido Key area next to the Gulf Islands National Seashore. Davis Wood with the Escambia County Public Safety says the county experienced several drownings in vulnerable areas where it has since placed lifeguards.
Having lifeguards at the beach, it all starts with just that simple interaction. Letting people know, A, shouldn't go in the water today, or understand that these are the risks that do come with going in the water today. Those are very small interactions that can lead to life-saving results.
County Commission Chair Mike Kohler says this news is still fresh. They're not sure what steps the National Park Service will take. County officials say the need for the lifeguards is imminent and the future of added protection in the Gulf Islands National Seashore is up in the air. There's nothing like celebrating at a Mardi Gras parade, then discover your vehicle was towed along the parade route. That scenario could play out for you if you happen to park in the wrong place for the downtown Mardi Gras parades. Pensacola is closing more streets this year to increase security. And for the first time, the city is going to close Main Street for the parades. Pensacola has two downtown parades, of course, the Crew of Lafitte Illuminated Parade on Friday, February 28th at 7:30, and also the Pensacola Grand Mardi Gras Parade on Saturday, March 1st at 2 p.m. Governor Ron DeSantis is scoffing at reports that Canadian tourists and winter visitors are having second thoughts about coming to Florida. Tammy Trujillo has details.
The reports say they're staying away because of President Trump's tariff policy and his offer to make Canada the 51st state.
Oh, Canadians rethinking, you know, going to Florida in light of the tensions. I'm seeing a lot of Canadian license plates in Florida.
DeSantis says Canadians' desire to escape the cold will override politics. The governor says tourism numbers have increased following previous calls for boycotting Florida. Canadians have booed the U.S. national anthem at hockey games and started campaigns to buy Canadian in response to tensions with the U.S. I'm Tammy Trujillo.
And right now, let's check our forecast from Channel 3.
This is meteorologist Brooke Richardson with your first morning weather update. We are going to be seeing a chilly day today with temperatures in the 40s for highs, plenty of sunshine. Overnight tonight, dropping back below freezing in the 20s. Waking up Friday morning, very cold with a high near 51 in the afternoon. Friday night, temperatures dropping near 38. Starting a gradual warm up through the weekend, mostly sunny on Saturday with a high near 58 and a low near 43. Stay connected at Channel 3 News First Morning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Morning Weather Center.
Thanks, Brooke. Right now, 35 degrees in Pensacola, 36 in Gulf Breeze, and 35 in Milton at 535. The next news is at 6, breaking news anytime. I'm Steve Taylor for News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
With the arrival of the all-electric Volkswagen ID. Buzz, there's a lot of excitement generating at P4 Imports on New Warrington Road. The highly anticipated new VW van brings the past back to life while aiming toward the future with bold innovation that promises to impress. Catch an ID. Buzz on your exclusive test drive today. And while you're there, check out the 2024 Atlas and Atlas Cross Sport. These full-sized SUV models are available with 1.9% financing for 60 months or up to $4,500 in customer discounts. And the 2024 Tiguan, VW's crossover, is available for 0% financing for a full 60 months or up to $3,000 in rebates. Peakmore Imports on New Warrington Road has the distinctive and innovative design that Volkswagen drivers love to drive home. They're not in Car City, so you won't pay Car City prices. Peakmore Imports, 106 New Warrington Road, Pensacola.
Discounts are a standalone offer and not to be combined with special APR rates offered through Volkswagen Financial Services. Qualifying credit offer expires March 3rd, 2025.
Ladies, do you want to feel more connected to our community? Consider joining Impact 100 Pensacola Bay Area, a women's philanthropic group that has awarded 165 grants totaling more than $17 million in our community. Connect with other women and increase your area impact. Membership deadline is March 1st. For details, check us out on Facebook or visit impact100pensacola.org.
News Radio 92.3 is proud to be a partner in the success of a lot of local businesses. We want your business to be part of this success story in 2025 with our unique platform to showcase your powerful message. Every day, News Radio's Pensacola Expert Panel provides an opportunity unlike any other. Hi, I'm Meg, host of the Pensacola Expert Panel. Let us help you share your message. Contact us to get you and your business part of the Pensacola Expert Panel. Call 850-262-6000.
Ready for intelligent and thought-provoking conversation? Tune in to The Guy Benson Show on News Radio Pensacola. Weekdays from 2 till 4 p.m. on 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620. Guy Benson, the brilliant and charismatic host, brings you a fresh perspective on the biggest stories of the day. Guy keeps you engaged and informed. Don't miss out on the intellectual thrill ride. Tune in to The Guy Benson Show on News Radio Pensacola from 2 till 4 p.m. It's the show that'll challenge your thinking and leave you wanting more. On News Radio Pensacola.
Good morning, 5:37 here on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. It is cold. It's right at freezing right now. So, yeah, rough. Plus, all the cold weather shelters have been open in the area, which is good, necessary, appropriate. And it's going to be colder tomorrow even. So, you know, right? It's going to be like 28
Wait,
tomorrow
you
morning.
You just said it's going to be colder tomorrow?
I think that's what I saw on
Channel 3. I don't know. I'm just asking.
No, I'm. Let me triple check because, you know, anytime you question me, I'm always going to, you know, make sure that I get that right. But I'm pretty sure it's supposed to be like down to 28 tomorrow morning. So just real quick here. Yep, I had it right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be even colder tomorrow morning. So yay for us.
Yay.
All right. Yesterday, we had a chance to talk to Mayor D.C. Reeves about a variety of things, including downtown parking, which we did. Mayor Reeves, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Thank you so much, Andrew. Happy to be here.
Great to have you. Okay. First question I have for you is just a clarity question. I, of course, watched the press conference yesterday, and we talked a bunch about it, and our news department has been promoting the changes in the road closures, the perimeter being expanded for the parade, and, you know, the parking enforcement, all of that, all of which it makes sense to me. I agree with. Those are all, and including even, you know, blocking off Main Street at Palafox, because you guys are absolutely right. That is a very dangerous situation where you have floats and pedestrians and cars, and it's all bad. What I don't understand, and I just want to make sure that I do get it clear, is in the map you guys released yesterday, it makes it look like all of Main Street from Community Maritime Park all the way over to the Veterans Memorial Park and Romana is going to be completely closed starting an hour before the parade. Even Cedar Street is going to be completely closed starting an hour before the parade. That's what the map seems to indicate. Is that the intention?
We will provide clarity on that. Obviously, I would want to get with our PPD team of exactly where it closes off. Understand, anytime we close a road anywhere in the city, it's never closed just at the point of concern, right? You have to back it up with signage and things like that. So it is certainly not out of the realm of possibility. It would be extended. It will not just be road closed signs, 10 feet away from Palafox Street, right? It's going to have some depth to it or some width to it, I guess. Where it is exactly, we can certainly provide clarity on. But yes, Main Street at Palafox being the main concern will be closed from an hour prior to the parade, and then will be reopened immediately following the parade. So, but we can get clarity on exactly how many blocks that is.
Okay, and that was exactly the question, because if Main and Palafox and then a block in either direction is going to be closed, and all you got to do is kind of go east on Main, drop down to Cedar, and come back up for Bayfront. Okay, no worries. I get that. That actually makes a lot of sense to me. If instead we're closing off that whole stretch of Main and Bayfront, I mean, that's a massive difference where you not just could go up to Cervantes, but would have to go up to Cervantes. That's a major change. And even just kind of, again, looking at the map, like Tarragona, I thought the idea was people would be able to drive on Tarragona, just wouldn't be able to go west, or that people would be able to drive on, what's the street that's just east of Coyle? I always forget.
DeVillers is the new extended.
Yeah. Right, and would you be able to drive on DeVillers or not be able to drive on DeVillers? The map seems to say both, and those are the questions that I just kind of want to get clarity on, because it was not clear to me, and I want to know. And it sounds like you guys aren't sure yet, and so you'll get back.
Yeah, we're happy to provide that, but let me touch on something you did say. If you are going to this parade, then I would plan on using A Street and 9th Avenue as the ways to get on whatever side of the parade you want to be on. In other words, you'll be able to get closer clearly than those two roads, but in terms of having larger thoroughfares that'll move traffic quickly, I would do exactly what you said. Treat Cervantes on the getting east and west, as well as A and 9th Avenue to come down to whatever street you would like or where you normally park or anything like that, because with Main Street closed, and we're only an hour before. So if you're there bright and early in the morning, no problem. But the safest way to handle it and to manage it is just come in from the north on whichever side of the parade route you want to be on. That's the safest way to do it. Both ingress and egress is that you're going to be going back north towards Cervantes when you leave the parade. Same type of situation. That's just good. Honestly, I think that's pretty sound advice, just given the traffic normally, much less the changes.
And just one more on this, just to make sure, because I know you get what I'm asking, but like the way this looks, and if it is that full closure, I mean, that looks like you can't get down to South Palafox, to the plaza. You can't get down to, Fish House or Atlas or any of that kind of stuff, the port. Like it makes it look like maybe all of that is going to be completely blocked off an hour before the parade. Until after the parade is over. And I just want to make sure that I wouldn't think that's the intent, but that's what I'm asking. And the other question, and somebody pointed this out to me, go ahead.
Listen, people are going to be able to move. Obviously, we get questions like, well, what if I live inside the box, and what if I work there and my shift starts at 2 o'clock? Obviously, like we normally do, a very managed situation with police at every one of these intersections. If there's some type of emergency situation, but what we don't want is people deciding to drive out there just for the sake of driving out there. That's what exactly the thing that we're trying to avoid.
Well, like I'm thinking the parking lots that are south of Main, whether it's New World Landing or the big parking lots, it actually makes it look like you can't even get to those. That's why I'm kind of asking. The other side of this that I was curious about is what's the reopening time? Because the people who, like, for example, the beginning of the parade starts, let's say at 2, and then you're done at 3, but the rest of the parade doesn't even get going. When is the reopening time planned to be, or do you know yet?
What I'd tell you is it's when the final float has gone through the parade.
Okay, so when the end comes all the way through. Okay.
And the argument there is, as again, Andrew, you've been here long enough, you've seen the melee that is the Palafox and Main intersection that is not protected with cars coming through. And so at the end of the day, if there are people standing there waiting to collect beads, then it's a safety issue, right? So that we're just going to be – you should expect that through the end of the parade. So if you don't, if you need to get through on Main Street for whatever reason – and again, you can always leave the parade by going north, by going towards Cervantes. So, you know, that direction. It's all we're talking about is that cut through on Main, which really, I mean, to be honest with you, Andrew, we should have probably done this years ago. So this is just – as we were looking and saying, what can we do better? This is one of those ones that's been, you know, we dusted off and said, this is, we finally need to do what we think is the right thing here.
Oh, and I agree with you about that, by the way. I mean, I have long thought that the Main and Palafox was a terrible catastrophe waiting to happen. So I actually agree with that. There was one of the things that you announced is that it's no longer going to be the nod, nod, wink, wink, you know, don't park here, we're going to tow your car. But that's actively going to be enforced with lots of signage, lots of early warning. The question I have is, you're not talking about getting all the cars off the streets everywhere within the box, I assume. You're talking about getting all the cars off of the parade route itself. Is that right?
That is correct. And if you didn't make that distinction, I was going to, just to save us both some emails.
But, right.
No, what we are not saying, you know, yes, if you park at your office or whatever, you know, or by that, none of the towing will be – what we are talking about is if your car – is directly in the parade route. As you can imagine, if you were in my position, anybody listening out there, imagine the safety compromise of having an empty, unattended vehicle in the middle of the parade, which we have rolled parades here with unattended vehicles in the parade. I mean, in which that will never happen again.
Right.
Listen, our PPD are reasonable people. They're going to try to call the owner. We do that all the time. You know, we want to do our best, but we are asking our residents to say, you know, if you parked there last night or – and there will be plenty of signage up, and we are putting it out 3 days in advance. So it's not – no one's going to be surprised by, you know, that, oh, I forgot I couldn't leave my car there. And this isn't a money-making thing. All we want to do is we want to get them out of the parade route and make it as safe as possible. So, yes, thank you for that clarification. We are not changing towing rules in our city. For this, what we are saying is if your car is going to be end up inside the barricades of the parade without us towing it, it will be towed.
Right.
3 hours ahead of the Saturday parade by 11 a.m. and by 5:30 p.m. on Friday. Obviously, there's a tighter window because of people working in the evening hours.
One last quick question just on parade security, because this is obviously a major focus for everyone in the United States after New Orleans, but it always has been. I am assuming it didn't come up yesterday, but I am assuming that we are still, you know, you're placing trucks, you're placing barriers, you're even going to be using those kind of semi-on loan to us red anti-vehicle devices. Obviously, we haven't put in new bollards or anything like that, which is sort of in the works for long term. But I'm assuming that we are at maximum available physical impediment implementation for the parade. Is that right?
That's correct. Obviously, we aren't going to come out and advertise that map of all of those things, but we have looked at where every truck goes, where every officer goes, where, you know, looking at where our vulnerabilities are, adding new equipment, adding new partnerships, you know, leaning on our sheriff's department, some of our state resources to help us, you know, further that effort. So, yes, what I can tell you is certainly this is. This will be, from infrastructure and a manpower standpoint, the most resourced parade we've had here.
Very good. Turning to some other things, one is, talk to me about this artist in residence program. I know you guys put out a video. I did not watch it yet. I apologize. But what is this all about?
Yeah, we're very excited about this. You know, we were always trying to strike that balance of trying to involve art in projects that happen around our city, and in our community, and striking that balance of making that something that's on our priority list, but trying to kind of right size it. And so, you know, is this something that needs a full-time person? You know, is there 40 hours a week of city representation within the art community? Maybe not. But then what we also realized through this process, and this is really born from listening to, you know, some part of the groups at U.S. Mayors I'm in, partner with the National Endowment of the Arts, and just really was born from looking at best practices in how other cities integrate within the arts community. And this was the one that we liked the most. I believe St. Paul, Minnesota has been doing this for a long time. But ultimately what we see is this rotating artist in residence program, and Danny DeCastro, obviously a renowned muralist in this area and beyond, will step in and do a great job for us. And her first job really is to do some of the things that we probably should already have been doing. For example, having an artist directory, who are artists in the city, and representing us as a liaison at these different things, be it ACE or Arts Festival, a seafood festival. You know, I kind of joke currently, before we create this position, that's my job. It's falling in my docket right now. If you've ever seen me draw anything, you don't want me as your artist in residence.
You can have good taste buds and not have good cooking skills. I mean, that's possible.
That's fair enough. Yeah, I got that in sports writing all the time. You know, have you played linebacker at Alabama? No, but, I know enough about it. Anyway, this is that right size in that we want to have representation. And what I think about, for example, is, if we're going to redo Palafox and maybe we want to have some type of installation, who's the expert that's going to come in between engineers and mayors and everybody else to say, maybe there's something cool we can do here? So it's kind of that injection of making sure that we have eyes on that. And if you look at our strategic plan, this is something that our citizens asked for. Is an increase in this, and is one of the eight things that we mentioned. And so we've been working on this coincidentally before we got those results, but certainly it reinforces that there is a need here for us to have some representation and really make it a two-way street. We want artists and that's everything from video to murals to whatever type of art, music that you're into. We wanted there to be a two-way street that folks that want to give us ideas or feedback has someone they can call, right, and have their voice heard at the city. So we're excited for it. It's a new thing. We'll learn a lot through this process, and the goal is to rotate this artist over time that we have different types of art being represented.
So it sounds to me like maybe this is a terrible comparison, but it's the one that jumps to mind is, we have a city arborist in order to manage all the trees. We have a city artist in order to kind of oversee, manage, liaise with the public art. And what I hear here is an emphasis on trying to increase the visual aesthetic of the city so that it's more of a place made. So that, is there an opportunity to add public art there, a mural or a sculpture or, as you say, video or, whatever the street art, whatever the thing might be, how can we make our community more vibrant in this regard? And if that's what you're looking at, I'm all on board. That sounds great.
That's a great way to put it. And what I realized is we have all of these types of touch points come across my desk, and then we just realized we didn't have anybody to get it to the finish line.
Gotcha.
And again, this may not need a full-time person, and this certainly isn't a full-time person. So we're trying to be respectful of budgets and taxpayer money and all these things. This is actually most of this first part is ARPA funded. So it's not coming out of a general fund, and we'll figure out in the years to come. It was trying to find that right size that we could have that representation without it being something overly burdensome to the taxpayer.
The airport, we're calling it a cell phone lot. I think probably we should just call it a smartphone lot or a waiting lot or something like that. But just quickly, I don't know, and I apologize for not knowing. Is it open? You had said it was going to be open, I thought, last week. But is it actually open and functional?
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, we had so many things at the press conference, I didn't get a confirmation. I believe it was supposed to open today, and I'm flying out at 6 o'clock. So if you call me tonight, I'll let you know.
Excellent. All right.
But yes, it should be. If it's not open already, it should be open. I think the expectation, and I have not heard a delay, so I expect that it's open today.
Okay, and just a technical question. Were we building a digital signboard of some kind that shows the flights, or are people going to have to be on their phones looking all the time, taking the alerts, that kind of thing? I just don't know which it was, because I've always valued when I go to other airports that there's at least some kind of a sign you can look at to check arrivals anyway, or is that not in place? I just don't know.
This is when someone would joke that that they would have to see my face on this digital screen too. Is what one of my friends would joke about if we put one at the airport. But,
okay. It's really just a texting lot. It's your friend texting you that, or your spouse texting you, I'm down, come pick me up. That's basically what it is. A waiting space.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. No, that's all I was just curious about. I didn't know the answer to that question. We always like to end with a lightning round, silly, frivolous, ridiculous, and super entertaining questions. Are you a fan of tamper-proofing on bottles, or would you rather go without it, run the risk, but also save the time and inconvenience of having to open the 13 anti-child locks on the Kraft ranch dressing?
Man. You know what? I do have a little sense of certainty on having the tamper-proof.
Okay.
I don't know.
You feel safer.
It also tests my, common sense every now and then as well.
All right, fair enough. Do you have a favorite burner on the stove?
Yeah, you know what? You got me thinking about this when you were talking about this way back when. I think it's front left. I think that's my go-to if I'm going subconscious. Front left, is that?
I think front left is a
sign, am I, or whatever.
Yeah, I think it's popular for an awful lot of people. I think front left is super, super popular. Last one is, does DC Reeves share food with anybody else? Your lady, your kid, do you share food, or are you very territorial about your food?
I do share food. My girlfriend usually eats the first bite of whatever I order before I do it. So I don't, it's kind of forced. I don't really have much of a choice, but
is that kindness? Is that assertiveness, or is that like, she's your taste tester to make sure?
Probably a little combination of wanting to try something that she didn't order is probably the main reason, but you know, with my maturity and growth, I've learned to adapt to this this practice, and I've just been very patient. I don't even take a bite; I just wait a second because I know it's coming.
It sounds like something you'd hear from the animal kingdom, like an act of dominance. Like, you give me that food for I love that your reaction is, I just let it happen. It's okay; she's worth it.
I'm gonna start fighting it. I'm gonna start fighting it now if you say that.
I think it's a beautiful give and take in a healthy relationship. So that's right. Or a take and take, as the bite may be. DC Reeves is the Pensacola mayor. I would love to know about the cell phone lot if that's open later. That's fantastic.
Yeah, we'll clear that up for you.
Right.
And on the Mardi Gras stuff, we'll get that.
Perfect. Look forward to that clarification. We got time. We got a week. Thank you so much for the time, sir. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, thank you.
Absolutely. And by the way, we do have a new map has been released. It looks like that earlier map was more of a preliminary map than a real final version, but it's much more clear now. And yes, in fact, Bayfront and Main is going to be closed an hour before the parade. So if you want to see that, it's on our Facebook page at News Radio 92.3, along with kind of, guidance from the PPD about, how the streets will be able to work or not. We'll talk with Mike Wood about this coming up in about an hour and a half, so I'll be able to hear his perspective on all that. 5:56 on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay.
There is a big difference in the type of service you get from companies that do air duct cleaning. Hi, this is Todd from Gulf Coast Air Care, and I want you to know the difference between a quality job and a blow-and-go duct cleaning job. Let me ask you this. Do you really think you can get a 1-carat diamond for $10? It's just like getting a $99 whole house duct cleaning. There are guidelines from the National Air Duct Cleaners Association and also the Better Business Bureau. A true inspection, cleaning, and restoration of an AC system includes the equipment and ductwork by a licensed and certified company. It's like a full detail for your car instead of the cheapy method of running it through a $5 wash and go. Air conditioners are expensive. Keeping them clean and well maintained is a guaranteed way to have better health and comfort. So you decide what works for you, the $5 wash and go or a full detail top to bottom. At Gulf Coast Air Care, we take pride in the certifications and the licenses that we hold. If you want the best quality and award-winning customer service, you can find us on the web at gulfcoastaircare.com or call 934-2768.
The King invites you to the 24th annual Gulf Coast Renaissance Fair, Wild West Roundup, Pirate Fest, this weekend and next weekend at Five Flags Speedway. Come out, enjoy some historic fun. Eat, drink, and be merry while you are entertained by jousting knights, wizards, fire breathers, sword fights, pirates, gypsy dancers, cowboy shootouts, falconry, and much more. Step back in time at the Gulf Coast Renaissance Fair, February 22nd and 23rd, and March 1st and 2nd, Five Flags Speedway, Pine Forest Road, Pensacola. Visit gcrf.us.
News Radio 92.3 gets you live programming every day from 5 a.m. until 7 p.m. on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Do you know a Clarence Wally?
Yes.
Do you know where we can find him?
Yes, I do.
The
Well, John asks, what's that from? Because it's like you know it, but you can't remember. True Romance. That's when James Gandolfini comes to Brad Pitt's house and he's sitting on the couch. You know, Floyd is sitting on the couch getting high on the bong and trying to find out where Christian Slater's at. Such a good movie. At 5:58 on News Radio 92.3, Steve Taylor's got a headline or two for us. Steve?
Elon Musk's Department of Government Efficiency, I've tried to say that three times, is making major cuts to the World Trade Center health program. That program provides medical treatment for the 132,000 first responders and survivors of the 9/11 terrorist attacks. Despite Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy pledging to help the 9/11 survivors, they laid off 20% of the program staff. And that's what's happening.
That. You said try saying that three times.
Oh, yeah. Oh. Very good.
Listen on air at 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620. News Radio 92.3. WNRP, Gulf Breeze, Milton, Pensacola.